Shariputra. For this reason, know that the Buddhas, by their tactful powers in the one Buddha vehicle, discriminate and expound the three lesser vehicles, to lead those who aren't quite ready yet to accept and understand the one vehicle toward it, to prepare them. The Buddha, desiring to proclaim this teaching over again, spoke thus in verse. Hi, everyone. Namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo. Thanks for being here. Thanks for your practice. I hope this finds you in good health and safe. Suppose there is an elder. Same elder, different elder? Who has a large house. And for long, this house has been old, is also falling and decayed, with lofty halls in dangerous conditions, pillar bases broken and rotten, beams and roof tree toppling and leaning, foundation and steps in a state of collapse, walls and partitions ruined and cracked, their plaster crumbling away, thatch in disorder and dropping, rafters and eaves awry and slipping, its surrounding fences bent and distorted, filled with all kinds of refuse. 500 people are dwelling in it. Well, is this a repetition of the burning house? Hold on. Owls, hawks, and vultures, crows, magpies, pigeons, doves, black snakes, vipers, scorpions, centipedes, millipedes, geckos, galley worms, weasels, ferrets, rats, and mice. All sorts of deluded and malicious creatures run about in every direction. Oh, yum. There are places stinking with excrement and urine, overflowing with uncleanliness, where dung beetles and worms flock together. Foxes, wolves, and jackals bite and trample each other to gnaw human carcasses, scattering their bones and flesh. This is starting to sound really ugly. Following these, packs of dogs come, striving to snatch and grab, and gaunt with hunger, skulk about, seeking food everywhere, quarreling and scuffling, snarling and barking. 500 people live in this place? Whew, there's a life condition. Such is the fearfulness of that house full of every variety. In every direction there are goblins and ogres, yakshas and malign demons who devour the flesh of men. I'm sure. All sorts of venomous insects and deluded and malicious birds and brutes hatch or suckle their broods, each hiding and protecting its own. Yakshas come striving with each other to seize and eat them. When they have eaten their fill, their deluded and malicious minds become inflamed, and the sound of their quarreling is dreadful in the extreme. Kumbanda demons crouch on the earth and mold, sometimes springing from the ground a foot or two high, wandering about to and fro, giving full rein to their sports. Seizing dogs by their feet, striking them so that they lose their voices, twisting their legs around their necks, frightening dogs for their own amusement. Ugh. Also, there are demons, tall of stature, naked, black, and lean, always dwelling in that house, who emit great and dreadful sounds, bellowing in search of food. Everybody's hungry in this house. Hungry and decaying, yes? Again, there are demons with throats narrow as a needle. And there are demons with heads like a bullock's, like an oxen head. Some eat human flesh, some devour dogs. Their locks are all disheveled. They are cruel and fiendish, and obsessed by hunger and thirst, race about crying and calling. What are these? What are these? I don't know. I don't care if there's 499 other humans in this place. I'm out. Yeah, I would not want to stay in that life condition. Oh my gosh. What a description. Yakshas and hungry ghosts, deluded and malicious birds, and brutes hungrily hurrying all directions, peeping and looking through window and lattice, such are its plagues, terrible beyond measure. Yeah, we get the picture, yeah? This decaying old house belongs to a man who has just gone outside, but a little while ago, whereupon that house, of a sudden, catches fire. Well, this is sounding a lot like the parable we just listened to, but with incredibly more detail, right? All at once, in every direction, its flames are in full blaze. Thank goodness. Roof, tree, beams, rafters, pillars with cracking sounds burst open, breaks split and topple down, walls and partitions crumble, demons and spirits below and cry aloud. Hawks, vultures, and other birds, Kumbanda demons and other, hurry about in alarm, powerless to escape. Deluded and malicious beasts and venomous insects hide away in holes and cavities. Pishkaka demons also take up their abode therein. For lack of merits, they are driven by the fire, cruelly hurting each other, supping and devouring each other's flesh and blood, as they seem to have been before, but now in a greatly accelerated state. Creatures of the jackal tribe are already dead in herds. The bigger, deluded, and malicious beasts come striving to devour them. Fetid smoke and bursting flames fill and choke the surrounding air. Centipedes and millipedes and all kinds of venomous snakes burned by the fire run contending from their holes. Kumbanda demons thereon seize and eat them. And hungry demons, their heads ablaze with fire, tormented with hunger, thirst, and heat, rush about confused and in distress. Such is the state of that house. Dreadful in the extreme, with horrid calamities and conflagration and disasters, not a few. At this very time, the master of the house is standing outside the gate when he hears someone saying, "Hey, all of your children, a little while ago in their play, came into this house in their youth and ignorance, enjoying themselves with their amusements." This is a lot like the burning house parable we just read, but from a very different setup, point of view. The children had just gone in as the elderly man came out. On hearing this, the elder, in alarm, enters the burning house with intent to save them from the harm of burning. So he tells his children of all the impending dangers, saying, "There are deluded and malicious demons and venomous worms, and calamitous fire is spreading. Suffering upon suffering follow each other unceasingly. Venomous snakes and vipers, all kinds of yakshas, kumbanda demons, all sorts of galley worms are tormented by hunger and thirst and are to be feared in the extreme." Blah, 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 yeah? "Even these distresses are hard to deal with. How much more this conflagration?" The children, not heeding, though they hear their father's admonition, remain attached to their pleasures and do not stop their play. So again, in the gathas, in the verse sections, Shakyamuni is much more detailed in his teachings, his parables, his stories, yeah? Thereupon the elder begins to reflect thus. What does he reflect? "My children, acting in this manner, add to my anxiety and distress, of course. Now this house really has nothing to delight in, yet all my children, bewitched by their play, take no notice of my instructions and will be injured by the fire." Oh, I have an annotation here. This is an obvious analog to those who are completely distracted by satiating their desires and satisfaction of the skandhas. Yeah? Instantly, he ponders, arranges a device, and says to his children, I have many varieties of rare playthings, excellent carts, wonderfully bejeweled, goat carts and deer carts and great bullock carts, now all just outside the door. Come out, all of you. For your sake, I have made these carts. You may roam and play with them at your own will and pleasure. Something even more fun. When the children hear him tell of such carts as these, they immediately rush in rivalry, scampering forth and reach the open ground away from harm. The elder, seeing his children escape from the burning house, takes his place in the square, sitting on the lion throne, and congratulates himself, saying, Now I am joyful. All these children, brought up with so much difficulty, stupid, little, and arrogant, entered this dangerous house, abounding with venomous worms and fearful goblins in the whole mess. Conflagrations and raging flames broke out on every side, but all these children were fascinated by their play. Now I have emancipated them and caused them to escape from harm. But you haven't really taught them how to do it for themselves. You're still using expedient means to trick them, really, by their own lower realms of attraction to safety. This is the analogy of the three vehicles that Shakyamuni is making. Yeah? Therefore, all you people, now I am joyful. Then the children, knowing their father is sitting at ease, all come to the father and speak to the father, saying, what do you think they don't realize they're safe because of his efforts? They say, please give it to us, the three kinds of precious carts, as you promised. Where's our goodies? If you children come out, I will give you three carts, and you can choose whichever you like. They're quoting him, holding him to task. You said you were going to give us stuff. Now is the very time. Be pleased to give them to us. Arrogant little shits. Oh, man. The elder is very rich and has treasuries full of gold, silver, lapis lazuli, moonstone, and agate. With all kinds of precious things, he has made great carts, magnificently adorned and splendidly decorated, surrounded with railed seats, hung with bells on every side, strung with gold cords, you know the whole thing. Networks of jewels spread over them. Festoons of golden flowers hang down. Many colors and varied decorations surround and encircle them. Soft silk, silk floss, make the cushions. The best quality of fine felt. Yeah, we get it. Spread over the cushions. There are numerous retinues tending and guarding them. The excellent carts are equally given to all the children. They all get the best. Then the children, ecstatic with joy, riding these precious carts, roam in every direction, playing joyfully just as they wish, without hindrance. I tell you, Shariputra, I am also like this. The most honored of all the sages, the father of the world, all living beings are my sons, are deeply attached to earthly pleasures and without wisdom. The triple world is not safe, just as the burning house, full of all kinds of suffering, was greatly to be feared. Ever there are distresses of birth, old age, disease, and death. Such fires as these are burning ceaselessly. What does he mean by fires such as these? He's talking about the sufferings, the dukkha, of the attachment to these things, the cycle of pretend, as though it's a continuous, identifiable self. rather than a self as a process. Do you get the difference? I was dreaming last night of a stream and thinking, you know, we can point to a spot on the stream. And as I've said before, a point is not a thing. It's a location. But there's something that slips away in that definition because our samsaric mind wants to see a location like a city in Utah. It's there. It's been there. It's going to be there. Right? That's how we think location, map. It's a place on a grid. What Buddha sees and what samsara fails to see, what we tend to not see, is like pointing out a point on a stream. That the moment, and I mean moment, incredibly moment, right? Look up moment in Buddhism reference. That you point out a location. Whatever it is you're pointing at, whatever you think it is, let's say you're pointing at an atom. Let's make it specific. That's not a point anymore. That's not a location. That is a thing, an atom, yeah? But the moment you identify an atom at that point, it's not there. Right? The stream is moving. It's not there. Right? It's just like, when you hear that, you've heard it a million times in quantum, you can identify where something is, but you can't identify. If you identify where it is, you can't know how fast it's moving. And if you identify how fast it's moving, you can't identify where. This is that very thing. Because what we never take into account in our Saha world mind is that the stream is also no longer where you were pointing, nor is the earth, nor is Utah, nor is the earth, nor is the solar system, nor is the galaxy. Everything is moving at tens and hundreds of thousands of miles per hour, kilometers per second. Nothing is ever there, because the moment you say there, there is not there anymore. Everything is momentum. We are not here. We are being. We are a process of here, 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 here. Moment to moment to moment to moment to moment to moment. We're not a thing. We're a process. Happening. The living beings in it are my sons, but now this place abounds with distress, and I alone am able to rescue, liberate, and protect them. Though I taught and admonished them, yet they did not accept, for they were imbued with desires, to which they were greedily attached. That's samsara. Samsara is very attractive. Remember a long time ago, I used the analogy of a newborn baby. For the first several months, what does a baby do? Yeah, I know the obvious. It processes food. Yes, yeah, lovely. But everything it sees with boom, big eyes. And everything it can touch, it sticks in its mouth. Is there a better expression of greed, satiation? Right? The skandhas, seeing consciousness, tasting sensations, touch, skin. Why do I have to know how this ball tastes or that block fits in my mouth? What does it feel like? Is it hard? Is it soft? Because I'm not only am I identifying my environment, but by so doing, I'm also identifying me, 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 me. Therefore, tactfully, I tell them of the three vehicles, which cause all living beings to know the sufferings of the triple world, and reveal and expound the way of escaping from the entrapment of the world. To be a Shravaka is to learn about how we interact with our world and our self. To be a Pratyeka Buddha is to deeply consider our relations in our identifications with these things, to the point where the pinnacle of Shravaka or Pratyeka Buddha or even Bodhisattva in those early stages is to achieve to break that attachment. But that final attachment to the self that perceives still there. It's a false nirvana. But by learning that much, you would think that you would get there on your own. Didn't happen. So along comes the Lotus Sutra, the ultimate of the teachings. This is how it's done. So you can open your Buddha eye right now. It's already there. What are you waiting for? Why haven't you understood this yet? If all these sons are resolved in their minds, they will perfectly have the three clear views and the six transcendent faculties and will become Pratyeka Buddhas or Bodhisattvas who never slide back. I, for the sake of all beings, by means of this parable, teach the one Buddha vehicle. If all of you are able to receive these words in resolve, you shall be able to accomplish the Buddha way. This vehicle is wonderful, pure, and supreme. In all the worlds, there is nothing more exalted. It is that which the Buddha rejoices in and which all living creatures should praise, revere, and adore. Infinite thousands of codas of powers, emancipations, meditations, and wisdom, and the Buddha's other laws. Such is the vehicle provided to cause all my sons night and day for many kalpas ever to take their recreation moment to moment in it, with bodhisattvas as well as shravakas riding in its precious vehicle directly to the wisdom throne. For these causes and reasons, though one searches in every direction, there is no other vehicle except the Buddha's device. I tell you, Shariputra, all you people are my sons. In other words, of the Tathagata, the engine of life, that is the cosmos, we are all descendants of that engine of life. Therefore, with this awakening, this Buddha eye, able to observe this phenomena as it's happening, you will understand that we are all of the same potential energy formation realm of form. Yeah. I then am the Father. You, for successive kalpas, burning in many sufferings, have I wholly emancipated that you may escape the triple world. Though I previously taught that you would attain extinction, you have only become freed from the cycle of birth and death and have not attained real extinction, still maintaining a bodily self. What you have now to do is only to attain the Buddha wisdom, the Buddha experience. If there be any bodhisattvas among this assembly, be you ably, wholeheartedly to obey the real law of the Buddhas. Though Buddhas, world-honored ones, convert by tactful methods, yet living creatures transformed by them are all bodhisattvas. Because Buddha is a process. Buddha is an experience. but some vessel must do the experiencing. And that is the extremely rare benefit of being in human form, in the realm of human form. Because only with these skandhas and various other consciousnesses can we witness and know with the wisdom this experience of the engine of life. How amazing. If there are any of little wit who are deeply attached to desires and passions, they're pleasuring their skandhas, the Buddha, for their sake, teaches the truth of suffering. That's what Sravaka and Pratyekabuddha and the three lesser vehicles are. For you to understand how it is that you suffer, why it is that you're not in glorious experience. All the living with joyful hearts attain the unprecedented. The truth of suffering taught by the Buddha is real and without differentiation. If there are any living beings who do not know the source of suffering, deeply attached to the cause of suffering, and unable to forsake it even for a moment, the Buddha, for the sake of them, teaches the way by tactful methods, saying the Four Noble Truths. Remember the Four Noble Truths? The cause of all suffering is rooted in desire. 2. If desire is extinguished, suffering has no foothold. 3. To annihilate all suffering is called the third truth, cessation of formations. 4. For the sake of the truth of extinction, to observe and walk in the way, forsaking all bonds of suffering, this is called the attaining of emancipation, following the Noble Eightfold Path, right? From what have these people attained emancipation, right? What are you liberated from? Merely to depart from the false is called emancipation. But they have not yet really attained entire emancipation. So the Buddha declares that these people have not yet reached extinction. Not really. Because these people have not yet gained the supreme way. I am unwilling to declare that they have attained extinction, because they have not. I am the king of the law, absolute in regard to the law, pacifying all creatures, and therefore I appear in this world. Shariputra, this, my seal of the law, because of my desire to benefit all the world, is now expounded wherever you roam. Do not recklessly proclaim it. If there be any hearers, Sravakas, who joyfully receive with profound reverence, you may know these people are of Avivartika. If there be any who receive this sutra law in resolve, these people must have already seen Buddhas of past times, revered and venerated them. That's some typing. That's just, how did I spell that? And heard this law. If there be any people who are able to accept this teaching, they must have seen me and also seen you and these bhikshus, as well as these bodhisattvas. This law flower Dharma Sutra is taught for men of profound wisdom. Men of shallow knowledge hearing it go astray, not understanding. All the Sravakas and Pratyekabuddhas cannot by their powers attain this sutra. They need to go beyond what they think they know to reach this sutra. Shariputra, even you into this sutra can only enter by resolve. how much more difficult for those other Shravakas? All the other Shravakas, because of accepting the Buddha's words, obediently follow this sutra, but it is not that they themselves have knowledge. Again, Shariputra, to those who are haughty and lazy and those with self-centered views, do not teach this sutra. Common shallow people deeply attached to the five desires who on hearing cannot apprehend, don't teach it to them. Teach skillful means. Teach expedient devices. Teach lesser dharmas so that they stay motivated, so that they one day can accept and understand this teaching. Do you see what he's saying? If any people do not accept in and vilify this sutra, then they cut themselves off from all the Buddha seeds in the world, because they're going to reinforce their machinations, their negative karma. They're going to bolster their bad tendencies. They're going to bolster their deafness, their arrogance, so on and so forth. Or if again they sullenly frown and cherish doubts and perplexities, listen to my declaration concerning the recompense of such people's errors and faults. Whether during the Buddha's lifetime, now keep in mind, Nichiren read this just as you and I are. I am. And so he reads this and he thinks, whether during the Buddha's lifetime or after his extinction, if there be those, any, who slander such a sutra as this, who seeing those who read and recite, write, or hold this sutra, scorn and despise, hate and envy them, and bear them a tenacious grudge concerning the recompense of such people's errors, sin, listen now again, after their lifetime's end, they will be in the Avicii hell for a complete kalpa, being born again each kalpa and thus revolving in innumerable kalpas. They'll never escape. You know, the Avicii hell is this samsaric world that we live in this lifetime. And it will seem long and arduous. And they're the people who will laugh and gleefully say, life sucks, then you die. Right? Yeah. They're in the Avicii hell. And it seems prolonged suffering, yes? When they come out of hell, they will be degraded to animals such as dogs or jackals, with lean-cheeked forms, blue-black with scabs and sores, knocked about by men. Those are life conditions. You don't get reincarnated as a dog, right? Don't read that into it. That's not what he said. Now, as I said, Nietzsche is reading this, so this really motivates Nichiren to correct those teachers around him all over Japan and abroad, but he's worried about Japan, seeing these greatly honored teachers and watching how they discount the Lotus Sutra, how they say, oh, it's too complicated for the stupid people of today. Let me entertain them with my hand puppets. Nichiren can't tolerate this. He's read this. He's like, dude, it's not just that you're a bad teacher. You're working against the very teachings you claim to be a champion of. And you're being lauded for it. Shame on you. Change your ways. This is Nichiren, isn't it? I can see why he's inspired. Now, I have quite a long annotation here. Let's see what I have to say. A moment to discuss the Avicii hell and the birth into animality. We just read the teaching of the Four Noble Truths. The first two truths are concerned of the suffering in this life as a product of desires. This condition is a constant of life and is often called the condition of incessant suffering. This is also the name of or description of the Avicii hell. So this hell is simply the experience of an unenlightened being. Secondly, it is fact that we exist as moment-to-moment rebirths from one and into another. One moment and into another. Each moment is a birth and death pair in unfathomably quick succession. So to be born again is simply our experience of time. from one moment to the next. And as we know it, time is entirely subjective to the experience we're having. Just as in the picket fence analogy, see Buddhism reference, when sitting atop the points of a picket fence, a simple minute, 60 seconds, can seem like an hour as the points dig into our buttock, whereas a bench seems like seconds when only sitting for a minute. And thirdly, we have already learned the concept of the 10 realms of living beings, from hell, hunger, and animality to bodhisattva and Buddhahood, to state that we are then reborn into the next moment as dogs, etc., is a straightforward comment on our state of mind being shaped by our perception and our suffering. So there you have it. We continue. Moreover, by men hated and scorned, constantly suffering hunger and thirst, bones and flesh withered. These adjectives, these descriptions sound an awful lot like they came right out of that parable. Huh? During life, beaten with thorns, and after death, with potsherds and to stones, because of cutting themselves off from the Buddha seed, they receive such recompense for their errors and ignorance. Perhaps they become camels or are born amongst asses, always carrying burdens on their backs, being beaten with sticks, thinking only of water and grass, know nothing else. Because of slandering this sutra, such is their punishment. Have you ever spent any time around enclaves of the homeless? I worked for a stint in a mental hospital as an entertainer, of all things. I've seen some just heart-wrenching human conditions. But, you know, this wasn't from multiple lifetimes. This was right now. People who at one time were fine, but gradually or very quickly digressed into these abhorrent life conditions. How long life must sense, must feel, must be the experience of those people. Sometimes becoming jackals, they enter a village, their bodies scabbed with sores, having not even an eye. By all the boys beaten in stone, suffering bitter pain, at times even beaten to death. When they have thus died, again they receive a serpent's body of a shape as long as 500 Johannas. Right. Remember, Johanna is taught to be about 8 miles. So 500 Johannas. You ever seen a serpent that long? Of course not. We're talking about life condition. Deaf and stupid, without feet, they wriggle about on their bellies by many kinds of insects. Stung and devoured day and night in misery with never any rest because of slandering this sutra, such is their punishment. Should they become human beings, their powers of life are blunted, short and ugly, palsied and lame, blind, deaf and humpbacked. Whatever they may say, people do not accept. Their breath is vile. They are possessed by demons. They are needy and menial, ordered about by others, often ill and emaciated, having nothing on whom to rely, having none on whom to rely. So these are just pathetic life conditions, yeah. Quite a summarily terrible warning for those who would turn their backs on, or worse, assail Myoho Rengekyo. And so no wonder Nichiren felt so motivated. He didn't call out the eight schools and the eight errors and eight schools Gosho because he wanted to ridicule those people. He wanted to rescue them. See what you're doing, not just to yourself, but to all of those who are following you. The ugliness and the suffering you are sowing because of your arrogance. How many times have we been cautioned about that very thing throughout this sutra already? And we're only in the third chapter. Though they are dependent on others, These take no notice of them. Even if they gain anything, they instantly forget and lose it. If they make use of the means of healing and follow the usual methods of treatment, other ailments will only be added, or again, they will cause their patients to die. If they themselves are ill, none will save and cure them. Though they take good medicine, their disease becomes increasingly severe because it's a causal disease. It's not, see, we see the diseases as samsaric, but the defilements of our own karmic freight train because of the repercussions of our actions take their most negative expression. We are the ones responsible for turning that tide, for redirecting that tide. But it is very difficult if you've cut yourself off from the one fully enabled expression of the maximal potential of your karmic stream, yes? But anyone can start no matter what their experience. It just may take some more effort than others. It depends on the karma you started with, the karma you've repeated and built upon. Right? But Shakyamuni makes it clear, if you get on the right path, nobody is held back except by virtue of your own actions. Thought, word, deed. Thought, word, body. If other people cause rebellion and plunder and rob for such crimes as these, the repercussions perversely falls on them. They may not see that, but in some way, shape, or form, absolutely. Such conceited and small-minded as these never see the Buddha, the king of all the revered ones, who teaches the law, instructs, and transforms. Such malignant and ignorant as these are always born in distress. Moment to moment to moment, born in distress, right? Mad, deaf, confused in mind, they never hear the law. During kalpas innumerable, as the sands of the Ganges, whenever they are born, they are deaf and dumb and with deficient natural powers. Does he mean actual deafness? Perhaps, but he also means not able to hear. That's different. They constantly dwell in the hells as their pleasure gardens, or in other deluded and malicious states as their dwellings. Among asses, hogs, and dogs are the places where they must go. Because of slandering the sutra, such is their punishment. Now, this sounds, again, this is a translation, and I'm adapting it as much as I can to make it clear, but I don't want to rewrite it in my own wishes. Yeah, I don't know, like I said, Prakrit, Pali, Sanskrit, Gandhari, all these different languages and texts. I will take as much of this scholarship as I can and simply redress what I know are simply cultural biases, right? But some of these structures in here, they sound awfully religious, but I can read very easily among asses, hogs, and dogs. He's not talking about actual, why would he call a donkey an ass? If he wasn't really wanting to point out the behavior of an ass. We know those. And men or women who act as dogs or hogs, pigs. But when it says punishment, I don't know. I think I would prefer, in fact, I think it will change that. Because punishment sounds, again, from exterior source, right? Disciplining you. And that's not Buddhism. So we're going to change punishment to repercussions, because that can be easily understood as what we bring on ourselves. Yeah. Now I feel better. If they raise the mind of human beings, they're deaf, blind, and dumb, poor, needy, and feeble as their own ornament. As their own ornament. In other words, it's their behavior that's deaf, dumb, and blind, not their organs that are failing them. In fact, they're so enamored with those organs, trying to please their skandhas, that they effectively make themselves deaf, dumb, and blind. They can only see, like the children in the burning house, their playthings. They don't even understand that the heat and the smoke and the fire all around them is a threat to their lives. Yeah. I'm playing. Right? This is the samsaric disease. Dropsy and scurf, scabs, sores, and abscesses, all such ills as these will be their apparel. Their bodies are always fetid abodes, filthy and unclean. Whew, a lot of words of disgust, and he's upset. Can you not tell? Shakyamuni is quite upset at these people who just don't seem to want to know any better. They don't want to hear. But he's cautioning Shariputra. He's not venting about his dismay of these people. He's trying to get Shariputra to understand, now that you know, now that you've opened your mind to Myoho Rengekyo, this method of awakening your Buddha eye immediately in this lifetime, right now. You're so excited and joyful, I hear you. But don't make the mistake of thinking that now you can say this to anyone and everyone. Keep your mind about you. Yes, absolutely propagate this teaching. But be mindful of who you're talking to. Try to understand your audience. What do the comedians say? Read the room. Make it your endeavor not only to walk in the Buddha path, but with the Buddha wisdom, have the perspicacity, have the awareness of where people's lives are at, and teach them Buddhism at a level they can accept, that they can actually practice, and nurture them along the way until they're ready to experience enlightenment in this life. Not everybody is ready. And if you teach it too soon, you will create such problems for these people that you're setting them up for all of this horrible. So take it seriously, right? So it's not just an admonition of people who make these errors. It's an admonition for teaching irresponsibly, because then you're complicit in making these things happen. You don't want to do that. That's what he's teaching Shariputra right now. These people, they are deeply absorbed in themselves. They become angrier and angrier. Their carnal passions are utterly inflamed. They are no better than animals. Because of slandering this sutra, such is their repercussion. I say to you, Shariputra, those who slander this sutra, if I told the tale of their deluded and maliciousness, I could not exhaust them in a whole kalpa. For this cause and reason, I especially say to you, amongst undiscerning people, do not teach this sutra. Which, by the way, would be exactly the opposite of what a lot of so-called Nichiren groups would proselytize, right? Just accosting people in parking lots and so forth. No, know who you're talking to before you dive into Myoho Rengekyo. not everyone is ready to hear it. That doesn't mean you can't be friendly. You can't act as a bodhisattva with a Buddha mind. This will bring out the curious in them. And if they're ready, they will come to you. As Buddha, as Shakyamuni's already said in other parts of the Lotus, as well as other sutras, in the Lotus Sutra, he says specifically, if you're teaching this correctly, I will bring people to you. No, Shakyamuni doesn't come into the parking lots of malls and group people together and have them show up at your front lawn. That's not what that means. Because Tathagata is the nature of mind. And as you radiate out correctly this practice in your life, it will resonate in others. For some who it resonates in, it will repulse them. It'll push them away. And you want that. Because they're not ready. And they will cause you no end of trouble. But those who come to you, they may not be the shape, size, form, accent, whatever that you would prefer. But that's a skanda problem. Just know that if they're coming to you with curiosity, it is important that you answer that curiosity cautiously, methodically, right? Calmly, benevolently, and still observe, because people change. But they're in your life because there's something for you to learn as well as for them to learn. Everything is like that. Everything is like that. All happening together at the same time, changing in momentum. Where are we time-wise? Probably time to stop. Okay. If there be any who are clever, of clear wisdom, learned, and of strong memory, who seek after the Buddha way to such people as these, then you may teach it. Now, some people may need to be nurtured to that point. Fine. But they still have to be seeking it out. Right? You can't just go accost people and start teaching them. That's very problematic. And it's very disrespectful to this teaching, which is kind of the main point he's saying to Shariputra. I know you're excited, and this is an incredibly valuable teaching, but teach with dignity and respect for yourself, for this teaching, and for others. Not everyone is ready, and you're going to make them implode with fear, jealousy, or whatever, you don't know, if you force it upon them. Just be a beacon. Be the exemplar. Be like Nichiren. Thank you for listening. Really, I went on kind of long today. But this third chapter, it's very, I don't know, I could see a lot of reasons for reciting the entire sutra, but I know we don't have that many hours in the day. Not always, anyway, but at least once a month I like to go through. Well, how many times have I read the Lotus Sutra with you guys online already? So, but there is value. Do it once a month, once every other, do it on your birthday, whatever, pick a day. There's always something new that pops up in our minds in this teaching. It is very dense with instruction, even though at times it seems very repetitive. Sometimes the repetition is necessary to get through, right? All right, thanks for listening. Thank you for your support. The link's in the description. You all know what to do. I so deeply appreciate you guys. Take care of your health, and I'll see you in the next one. All right? Bye for now.